Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Good evening, everybody. Hope you're doing well in your part of the country. Mine is starting to get the chills outside. In fact, I was kind of excited, well, anyway, of course, about my guests tonight, but I've gone through different stages in my life where I've journaled, and I haven't done it recently. And yesterday, when I took the convertible and boarded it, kissed it goodbye and said that I'd see it the 1st of April, and it was blustery and all those beautiful colored trees I was taking pictures of a couple weeks ago were empty. And it was just a gray, windy, yucky day. I felt that veil of seasonal affective disorder coming down on me, and I thought, wow, some of my best work has been done under duress. And so I'm going to bring our guests on in just a moment, but I thought this might be a good time for me to start journaling. It's karmic between the time of the year and the two guests that are going to motivate me tonight. Hopefully it won't be quite like it normally is in the wintertime for me. But in any case, welcome everybody to Brain Injury Radio. I just want to remind you that we are on 7 nights a week. All of our shows, after they're aired live, do go into an archive for on-demand listening. So if you've seen this posted out on the internet, the link will not only be good for this live show, but for the archive version as well. If you want to call into the show tonight, either to listen or for questions or comments after we're done with the interview, the number is 424-243-9540. And let's see. What else? I wanted to steer you to the website. Also, the new peer-to-peer support line. It's the number 4, P as in Paul, EER11.org. Peer411.org. I just put that in the chat room for you. Ultimately, we're going to have a 24/7 peer-to-peer support line where one survivor can call in and talk to another. I think we're up to about 8 to 10 hours a day, but we're always looking for volunteers. And the commitment is only 4 hours a month. So if you're looking for a way to bring a little additional purpose into your life, or especially during this season to reach out to someone, particularly another survivor, be their ear, I encourage you to check out 4Peer11. You get thorough training. And then again, the commitment is only 4 hours a month. There's also information there about our programming, as well as the medical ID card that Craig Cecilia, our founder, worked so hard on. For those of you who don't wear Medic Alert jewelry but do have some issues that would need to be addressed, especially if you were found unconscious somewhere, there is a card, like I say, about the size of a driver's license. And I'm not a techie type person, so I can't tell you how much, but a good deal of medical information can be put on that card so that all they have to do is swipe it. Now, in my case, from my craniotomy, from the ruptured brain aneurysm, I have an oldie clip that is made of a certain kind of metal that precludes me from having an MRI or any kind of magnetic test, or it could really dislodge that clip and cause a lot of problems, and things like that can go on the card. Also, we've heard stories before about TBI survivors who, because maybe they have a speech issue or a walking challenge, have been thought to be intoxicated when police officers have pulled them over, and it hasn't been a pretty sight on either side. With more and more of our veterans coming home, particularly with the TBIs and the PTSD, might be a good idea, if you do have any of these issues I'm talking about, to check out that medical ID card. A lot easier to just whip out the card and give it to the police officer than to try to explain when emotions are running high. So again, that's another thing for your consideration. What I've been doing the last couple of weeks, because this is the 11th month and that's all about Thanksgiving, is focusing on gratitude. And there was a paragraph on gratitude that I had found someplace. I read it to you the last 2 weeks because I liked it so much, and I was going to read it to you up until Thanksgiving, except that, you guessed it, I misplaced it. So I found another one today along the same lines on Psychology Today's site. Excuse me. It's called The Benefits of Gratitude. Gratitude is an emotion expressing appreciation for what one has, as opposed to, say, a consumer-oriented emphasis on what one wants or needs, and is currently receiving a great deal of attention as a facet of positive psychology. Gratitude is what gets poured into the glass to make it half full. Studies show that gratitude not only can be deliberately cultivated, but can increase levels of well-being and happiness among those who cultivate it. In addition, grateful thinking, and especially expression of it to others, is associated with increased levels of energy, optimism, and empathy. So, I believe it said that in my last gratitude paragraph too, that the more grateful you can be, the more positive you can be, and the more positive you are, the more others want to be around you. And it also helps with challenging times in our life. I know for a lot of us, we've talked about, well, even quote-unquote normies, this is a very hectic time of year. There's a lot of a tendency to be reflective or projective and get ourselves in a lot of trouble. So I really try hard to be aware that this is a difficult time of year for me and accept that that has pretty much been established as a pattern for me. And so the action I take is to practice gratitude, whether that's through a gratitude list or coming here and talking to you guys on the radio, participating in a support group, reading a daily devotion, prayer, a lot more prayer and meditation, and trying to hang around people that are festive and not feeling the same bottom I am at the exact same time. And I'll close with a quote and then I'll bring on our guests. Let us be grateful to the people who make us happy. They are the charming gardeners who make our souls blossom. Marcel Proust. Okay, I think we might be ready to go. This show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and survivors share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. Tune in, stop in, and call in. This is a We Recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Now, I'm going to introduce our guest to you tonight. Boy, the cold must have frozen up my tongue or something. I'm having problems here. I want to thank my sponsor for Recovery Now, and that's Lash Publishing. And I'm going to type this in the website for those of you that are in the chat room. But for those of you listening, you would go to www.lapublishing.com, lapublishing.com, and you'll find Lash Publishing. You'll see that they only publish materials that have to do with brain injury, whether they're for professionals or survivors. And something that we've all been really excited about is the release in April of the Brain Injury Journey magazine. So if you go to LA Publishing, you'll see on the left side toward the top, Brain Injury Journey magazine. If you click on that, it will take you to the subscription page, and you'll see that you can subscribe for the, I believe it's 6 times a year, paper magazine, hard copy, to come to your home. But if you scroll down just a little further, you'll see sign up for the free, can't beat the price, online version here. And the new fall edition did just come out, so I encourage you to do that. Go to LA Publishing Brain Injury Journey Magazine. Sign up for it at no cost for the online version, and you can even get back issues. Barb, our guest tonight, one of our guests, actually both of them have been in Brain Injury Journey. Barb, a little more active. Tonight, my guests are Barbara Stahura and Dawn Westfall. Barb and Dawn co-facilitate journaling groups for people with brain injury based on Barbara's book, After Brain Injury, Telling Your Story. They have witnessed how the writing and sharing, short of journal entries, has great power for fostering healing after brain injury has altered people's lives. Dawn Westfall, MS-CCC-SLP, received her master's in speech-language pathology from Eastern Illinois University. She works at Health South Deaconess Rehabilitation Hospital, where she specialized in treating adults with brain injuries for the last 22 years. For 12 years, she assisted with developing and managing a community rehabilitation program that assisted individuals to live independently. Barb Stahura, certified journal facilitator since 2007, guided people with brain injury, family caregivers, and others in harnessing the power of therapeutic journaling for healing and well-being. Co-author of the acclaimed After Brain Injury, Telling Your Story, the first journaling book for people with brain injury. She is a member of the faculty of the Therapeutic Writing Institute and also of Lash & Associates Speakers Bureau on Brain Injury. And I will put her website, barbsahara.com, into the chat room just as soon as I unmute our guest for tonight. Barbara and Dawn, how are you ladies tonight?
Good. Thank you for having us.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Barb. So you guys just recently unveiled, I want to talk a little bit separately about what you've been doing, just kind of start it at the beginning, but it's been really exciting. You recently got together, well, maybe not so recently, but you've been working for a while together to put together the program, and was it Indiana that you first presented this at the conference in Indiana?
Yes, at their the Brain Injury Association conference in September, I think it was, and we put together a joint presentation about combining journaling with cognitive therapy to enhance the therapy. And Dawn is the speech therapist. She can tell you more about the therapy part.
Okay, good. Well, why don't we, whichever of you wants to start, Dawn, why don't we start with you? And tell me a little bit about speech therapy. Actually, as a matter of fact, you know, when I started doing this a little over a year ago, being a host on Brain Injury Radio, I had been 17 years since my brain incident and had never met another survivor. I had a craniotomy and I was deemed a success because I could walk and talk. I had a visiting neurosurgeon who left after a couple of follow-up visits, and then it was never suggested that I see a neurologist. And I never went back to my internist because he misdiagnosed me for 24 hours and nearly killed me. So I'm one of those who fell through the cracks. And until I wrote my book at the beginning of 2012, I really had no awareness. But my dad, who has Parkinson's, had back surgery last year, and I went to some of his therapies with him, and there was occupational therapy and speech therapy, and I really had my eyes opened because I wasn't, not subjected, introduced to, wrong word, sorry, to any of these types of therapy. And as I sat there and observed and listened, I thought, wow, I can't believe that nobody sent me to do this back in 1995. And so that is literally the only exposure I've had to speech therapy, occupational therapy, or any of the other things I probably should have been doing 18 years ago. So tell me a little bit about how you got interested in getting in your career path and how that's worked for you. You've been at it for a couple of decades.
Oh, that makes me sound old. Well, first of all, unfortunately, the story that you just told is a story that I hear over and over again. And I think we're getting better at it, but I think that people still fall through the cracks a lot, unfortunately.
I do, too. I'm surprised. I don't want to interrupt you, but, again, it's been a little over a year that I've been here, and I am appalled that things, me as the host here, that I hear so many stories that mimic mine, and mine was in 1995, and these people are just happening in the last 5 years, and I think the only thing more shocking than what I was finding out on my own is that it's still going on so much.
Yeah, I know. It's such a shame. I know in the Evansville area where I'm at, we have a couple of committees right now that are just looking at that exact problem, because it is still going on, and that's ridiculous in this day and age. You asked about speech therapy. We have a really bad name, I think, because, you know, they call us speech therapists, and speech is really a very small part of what I do during the day. Speech therapists can do, of course, speech and language, but we also do cognition or thinking abilities, and we work on swallowing as well. Most of my day is spent working on cognition or thinking abilities, like memory and attention, problem solving, those types of skills. And oftentimes, that's what the person needs after an injury to the brain. And so, you know, they hear that they're going to speech therapy, and they're like, but my speech is fine. So sometimes I wish we had a different name.
You know, that's what's funny, and I was embarrassed to say, and now I'm going to say it because you cleared the way for me, but I couldn't remember between the occupational and the speech. But now that you've clarified, what I can say is when I was observing my dad, one of the exercises, and they did a number of them, but one of them was a list of, like, I don't know, let's say it was 10 words, and the first one was apple, and then they were all, you know, apple, tree, car, and then she asked him to repeat the words, and my dad repeated them all, and I'm in my head, you know, you're over there, the fly in the wall almost, and I'm trying to do these along with, you know, quietly, and I stuck on apple, the first word. And I thought, oh, this isn't good. And then we went on, he went on to have some other tests done, and right now I can't even think of what they were, but they did have to do with memory, and he was doing great at these tests, you know, at 73 years old, 8 years into Parkinson's. One of them, he was off slightly on one of the words, but it meant the same thing. And I was horrified. I about either wanted to go out and burst into tears or throw up on my shoe. I couldn't believe it, you know, when I was sitting there listening to him go through these tests, and I'm trying to do them in my own mind, and I can't.
Right. Well, you asked why I went into speech therapy, and it's kind of funny. I always tell people I knew that it was a perfect match because my favorite things in the world are talking and eating. So it's, you know, what I get to do. I get to help people think, talk, and eat. So, you know, I just knew I couldn't go wrong. But it's also a very diverse career. I mean, there's a lot of different areas that you can go into. You can work in a hospital setting, school setting, private clinic. And then there's a lot of different facets that you can go into. You can work with kids. You can work with adults. You can work with one specific population or a variety of populations. So there's just a lot of diversity to it. But once I started working with individuals that had some form of injury to the brain and started doing the cognitive part, I just found that that was definitely my niche.
Very cool. Very cool. And so you've really been at the same place for 22 years or just in the career?
Actually, in June, it will be 24 years.
Wow. You better update that bio.
I know it. I know. I must have put the wrong number in. But, yeah, it'll be 24 years in June. So
it helps out.
Yep, I've been there quite a while.
Well, you must be happy with the program that they have there. I'm sure, you know, maybe you haven't worked at a lot of other places, but you certainly have continuing education, colleagues, friends, people that you're meeting out doing these presentations and so forth, and you must believe that they have a pretty progressive program where you work.
I do. I'm really fortunate. When I was in college, I found out about HealthSouth, It wasn't HealthSouth at that time, but it's freestanding rehabilitation. So we're a hospital that does nothing but rehabilitation. And I knew that's where I wanted to work. So I got the job after I got out of college. And even though I've been at one place, I've had a lot of opportunities. For 12 years, I ran a program off campus. We actually did it in a strip mall. And we did a day treatment program where individuals would come and they would spend the entire day. And we would take them into the community, maybe back into their job, or we would go on, like, various trips into the community and have them practice the skills there. And that was just a phenomenal program that we had. Unfortunately, just like everything else, you know, with funding changes and things like that, you can't always keep programs like that going. But now I work in, and then I manage the outpatient department for a while, and now I'm back to just being a speech therapist, which is what I really, truly love, 3 days a week. So that's wonderful.
Great. Well, with all your getting around, I'm not sure how you'd be able to fit it all in. So how did you and Barb meet?
Well, I run the Brain Injury Support Group in Evansville. And so we had this wonderful couple, Barb and Ken, that showed up one night. And it was Barbara and her husband, Ken, and got to meet them through the Brain Injury Support Group. And then Barbara and I just quickly became friends and started going to coffee. And we started talking, and she was telling me about the journaling groups that she was doing at the Phoenix, Tucson HealthSouth. And so we got to talking and said, well, we need to get those going here. And so we met with the CEO of the hospital and convinced her, and we've been doing them ever since.
That's great. And that was how long ago?
What, about 2 years, Dawn?
I was going to say 2 years,
close,
yeah.
Yeah, close to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and great. I'm sorry, we were just having just a moment of technical difficulty, but I think we're fixed. Okay, good. Boy, don't you love technology sometimes? You can use a pen and paper to journal, can't you, Barb?
Oh, yes. In fact, I prefer pen and paper mainly because I'm a rotten typist, but I think there's something more immediate about using a pen on paper, you know, if you're able to do that. If maybe perhaps a brain injury means you can't write by hand, you can always type. Or you could even use, like, voice recognition software, things like that,
right.
If you need to. There's all different
ways. I'm actually like you a little in that regard. I have a lot of arthritis and a couple trigger thumbs, but I got to tell you, when I'm writing, it seems to go straight from my mind through my body and out the pen. It's almost like a fluid motion. And I don't type like that, you know, with two fingers. There's nothing fluid about it. And so as long as I can do it with the pen and paper, and I've got all these pretty notebooks I've got in place, or journaling books, you know. There's so many pretty ones when you go to different stores. And I keep buying them and taking notes in them. And instead of doing, you know, the practical thing, which would be to fill one, put it away, and be a little organized, I've got notes to myself going, and probably, I don't know, 8 of them. They're all very pretty, but if I want to go and refine, you know, what I've been, what I'm looking for, I can't a lot of the time. So, it's funny things like this that I hear are so common. Now, tell me what got you interested in journaling. I know a little of your history, and we talked before, but for the audience who hasn't had the opportunity, start a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your husband and why you started journaling, and a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, I actually started journaling in the early 90s. I was single then, divorced, and I was trapped in this corporate job that was probably killing me because it was so stressful, and I just started venting on paper. I needed to get it out. And so eventually I was able to leave that job. I became a freelance writer, and I journaled on and off. But then after I met Ken, I met him in 2000. We got married in 2003. And 9 months to the day after the wedding, a hit-and-run driver left him with a pretty serious traumatic brain injury. And, of course, I was thrown into the role of caregiver. And the day after the accident, I took my journal with me everywhere. I knew I would need a record of what was happening. I figured I would want to have a way to just express myself because that is such a horrible, confusing time. So I journaled like crazy for a long time while he was in the hospital in rehab and after he came home. And then it kind of tapered off, but on and off I would journal. And then I think it was in 2007 I had what I've come to call a light bulb moment. And I knew that journaling was very good for people. There have been different studies done, a lot of studies, and a lot of therapists use it. It's very therapeutic. And I thought, well, what if people with brain injury could journal? Maybe it would help them. Because I had seen the changes that Ken had gone through, and I thought that having this kind of self-expression would be helpful. So as Dawn said, we were living in Tucson at the time, Ken and I, and his outpatient speech therapist there, Susan Schuster, I went to her and said, well, what do you think of this idea of a journaling group for people with brain injury? And she loved it. So we went to the CEO there. She loved it. And we started doing this group. It's a six-week program. And so at the end of 2007, we started doing this program. I just created it sort of by the seat of my pants. I did some research, and it evolved over time. And then in 2009, it became the book, After Brain Injury, Telling Your Story, that you mentioned earlier from Lash & Associates. Mm-hmm. And then the people in my groups, they really inspired me. They were so honest and courageous, I thought, to write and share what they'd written. And I really wanted to become better at facilitating these groups. So I started a program and to become a certified journal facilitator. And that I was certified in 2011. And then around that same time, Ken retired. He was, you know, he recovered well, fortunately, and was able to go back to work. He retired, and we moved from Tucson to Indiana, where I had lived before. And then, you know, Dawn, like Dawn said, we ran into her at the Brain Injury Support Group, and the rest is history.
Wow. Now, I guess kind of compelling on my mind, normally around here, when people retire, they go to the Southwest, but you were in the Southwest
We went back.
Moved. Yeah. What was up with that, Barb?
Well, Ken was grew up in California, and he had been in Tucson since, I think, 1979. And then I got there in 1999, and so I don't know. We were kind of tired of the desert. I mean, I'm a Midwestern person, and I really miss the seasons and it just keeps getting hotter and hotter there. They've been in a drought forever. I think the water situation is going to be kind of bad in 10 or 20 years. And we just wanted something different. And I had lived here before in southwestern Indiana, and I really loved it. So Ken and I came back. It was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years before he retired and bought some property. And then when he retired, we came back here and built a house. And wow. I just love it. Four seasons, you know, you mentioned the colorful trees earlier, and the trees here have been just wonderful this fall.
Yeah.
And, of course, now that all the leaves are off, but it's okay. I'm ready for winter.
Oh, God. Now, see, that's the thing. I don't know. I might have just moved a little north in Arizona.
Oh.
I'm not so sure. But maybe it's because I was born and raised here, so you know, I didn't get the opportunity to live away like you. And right now I'm looking ahead, and that's why I was talking earlier about focusing on gratitude and taking things a day at a time, because when you look at winter today, it looks like a long time.
Yes,
you know,
it does. It does.
Going out for the next few. So, in any case, I think those are a couple important tools. But I wanted to go back for a minute. When you were talking about journaling when Ken was sick, were you I imagine it was a combination of, you know, some things were probably taking notes that the doctors said. How did you, were you talking about how you were feeling as things were going, transpiring, or observations about Ken, cursing or praising the treatment plan?
Uh-huh. Right. It was all of those things. Ken was, he was never in a coma, but in the beginning, he was pretty delirious. He had expressive aphasia, so he kind of talked and didn't make any sense. He forgot who I was for a while, forgot my name. I mean, as a caregiver, I was terrified, and it was just confusing and horrible. And I basically needed a place to do all those things you just mentioned. I wanted to keep track of, you know, what the doctors and the other medical people were saying about Ken, you know, what he was doing, what I was doing, what I was thinking, what I was feeling. Sometimes I just needed to vent.
Sure.
Other times I just, you know, I prayed or I hoped in my journal. And it's just, there are many, many journaling techniques, but I didn't really know them at the time. And so I just kind of poured out into my journal whatever was in my heart, whatever I needed to say and to explain or just to keep a record of.
And I think, I don't know, you talk about, and I can't remember, I read your book. I can't remember if it's your book or something I read that you wrote in Brain Injury Journey, but God, now I lost my point because I was trying to figure out where you wrote it at.
Oh.
Let's see. Well, one of the things is that, you know, when you're journaling, it's private. There's a time and a place, mm-hmm. you know, to have discourse with others, maybe some therapy, a good friend, you know, maybe a religious person, sometime that you really need to talk things out. But, you know, there's another time, I think, where you need to express, you know, there was a time that I was pretty aggressive, and, you know, that can be off-putting to people. And even if you have mm-hmm. a good point, your point can get lost because of your attitude. And
right.
some things, you know, like what you were just saying, that you can pour your heart out anonymously, but it's almost like, for me, it used to almost be like an exorcism. All of these things that I would carry around in my gut that would keep me awake at night or, mm-hmm. you know, give me headaches or gastro problems or make me short or quick to judge, you know, my character defects would be set ablaze, were all things that I just needed to dump. And,
right.
you know, if you don't want to go necessarily into a therapy situation, if you're not a support group kind of person, or if you are, but, and again, I'll bring up the time of year, you just need something a little extra. And again, I thought through this today, and I thought, you know, we all have our maintenance programs for recovery, and that's whatever we try to do for ourselves on a regular basis to keep ourselves as fit mentally, physically, and spiritually as we can. But when we come across very trying times, whether that's a loss of some kind or going into a busy holiday, I think, you know, we can have a tendency to do what our regular routine is, but all of a sudden it's like a balloon when you squeeze it, you know, it starts popping out in a bunch of different mm-hmm. places. And it occurred to me that for a complex person, most of my answers are really very simple and I overthink it. And what it means is if my maintenance program of recovery is good for me on a day-to-day basis, then during the more challenging times, I need to add more affirming exercises to help me keep the balance that I'm used to in my maintenance program. And I think journaling, as I said, is good in general, and we'll cover that in the show, but particularly because, you know, right about now you start hearing a lot of patter about this time of the year. And if you're not, audience, a regular person who journals right now, it might be something to add. You know, if there's certain things you do, you go to a support group, maybe read a daily devotional, but you're still feeling suddenly a little more depressed or short or a little crazier than you feel on any other given day, you know, it might be just a matter of picking up some tools that you don't routinely use. And I think journaling is a good one because, A, there isn't a cost involved in journaling. And, you know, this is a time of year when a lot of people are thinking about that. And sometimes that's one of the things that people are worried about of all of the other issues of just the hustle and bustle is, you know, the extra expense. And journaling is something that you can do that isn't, you know, it's free. And it is a way to express yourself. And I think it's also a good tool, and then I'll let you guys talk, but I also think it's a good tool to take. Now, when you mentioned Ken and him doing it, I've been a lifer in therapy in a lot of different venues, and no one once has suggested that I do that. I've done that when I've done it on my own, but, you know, I think that that would be a great tool for every therapist, because especially in my case, you know, let's say that I go every other week, and let's say the day after I've gone to my appointment, something's happened that has unglued me, or I couldn't remember a series of things that day, maybe didn't get enough sleep the night before, had some emotional things weighing heavily on me. Well, heck, by the time I see her 2 weeks later, I've lived a lifetime from that moment, you know, and don't remember it to tell her. And certainly not with the impact and the force that I felt it at the time, which is something I'd be able to capture like a snapshot by detailing it in writing.
Right. Well, one thing that's nice about journaling, as you said, it doesn't have to be expensive. You can go to, you know, Target and buy, or Walgreens and buy a composition book for a couple dollars and have a pen. That's all you need. And you don't have to spend a lot of time journaling either. You can journal pretty effectively in 5 or 10 minutes a day. So you don't have to devote a lot of time to it unless you want to. And as I mentioned, there are many techniques you can use that offer some variety that may help you, you know, go a little deeper, find some more insights you might not find if you just started writing without much plan or structure to it. So it is a very effective way.
Can you tell us a couple of those?
Sure. I mentioned you can journal in 5 minutes. There's just a technique called the 5-minute sprint. You set a timer and you go for 5 minutes, and about whatever's on your mind, and try to keep the pen moving the whole time, because as I tell people in my groups, you might, let's say I give people an exercise. And I say, we're going to write for 5 minutes. And so somebody's writing, and they say, they write for 2 minutes and stop. And chances are they're not really done, but they think they are. But if they keep their pen moving, even if they copy over the last sentence they wrote several times, a lot of times what will happen is that your mind gets back in gear and you go a lot deeper than you thought. So you could do that for 5 minutes. A real popular technique, I think, is the unsent letter. Where you write a letter to, you know, it could be anybody, anything. You can write a letter to people who aren't in your life anymore for whatever reason. I know I wrote several, what's the word I want?
angry letters?
Powerful letters to one of Ken's doctors. He had a pulmonary embolism when he was in rehab, had to go back into the hospital. His doctor there would never talk to me. And so I wrote several rather hot letters to him in my journal that I was never going to send. But I had to get that. I was just so angry at him because he would tell Ken all these things, and Ken couldn't remember anything, and he wouldn't talk to me. So I joke that, you know, by writing in my journal, I didn't go, you know, punch the doctor in the nose, which, of course, I wouldn't have done anyway, but it helped me get rid of some of my anger. But
that's
unsent letters can
quite
be
a bit.
Pardon?
I'm sorry. Go on. I was just going to say one has helped me quite a bit. And for those of you that do your journaling on the computer, that means don't hit send. Go
don't
on.
Don't do it in an email. These are, they're called unsent letters. So they're just meant, and it's good to, as an example, if maybe you're having a conflict with someone or you don't understand what someone's doing, you could write a letter to them that you're not going to send and just get it all out, and then maybe that will help you be calm enough to talk with them about it, or maybe write them a letter that you will send that is calmer and more reasonable. You can write a thank you letter as an unsent letter. Maybe someone has died and you feel like you want to thank them for something. You could write them an unsent letter. You can write an unsent letter to God or your higher power, you know, your guardian angel, anybody you want to communicate with.
Right. Another time I found those to be effective is, you know, if anybody has this on their mind or they're involved in a 12-step program of any kind where we feel like we need to go back and make amends for behavior, but the person, say, has passed away. You know, maybe it's a parent or a dear friend, and you don't have the opportunity to face-to-face that amends, that one of the tools that I use anyway is to write that letter of amends to that person, and then in living amends in other venues, I complete that process. But I think that, that's a good thing to try too. You know, when you're in a position where you can't really talk to the person anymore, like you said, that the letter can be very cathartic. I also believe, just because of my own personal experience, that we're all spiritual beings in a human carrying case, and that there's a sense of universal connectedness. And I'm not so sure that that person doesn't know what we're writing. We just don't know they know yet. In fact, I'm not even sure we'd need to do the writing. I think that they probably understand what's in our heart and in our spirit. But for us, it's cathartic. And those letters aren't so much for the other people. They're for us so that we can sleep at night.
Right. In my journaling groups, I ask people to write a letter to their brains. Or you can have you can write a letter as if it's your brain talking to you. Or like someone has another illness, say cancer or Parkinson's or something. You can write a letter to the illness and just say everything you want to say to it. So it can be really creative. You can really have some fun with it and maybe think about things in ways you ordinarily wouldn't think about.
Right. Well, you do get a chance to sort them out, especially, you know, for a lot of us, that mind is racing and the thoughts, you know, we just get a handle on them and it slips through our hands and the next one comes. And that's another reason why, especially in the brain injury groups, I think that journaling is very important because we get that, and I make jokes. I mute my mic off and on during the show when I'm going to cough or grab something from the refrigerator, and I forget to unmute it. So I tell people that some of the most profound things that I've ever had to say have happened, you know, when I've been on mute. And, you know, I think you can do that too when you're writing. You know, you won't lose some of those things that, you know, when they hit your mind or you hear it on a program like this, you think, you know, that really sounds like it would be helpful to me. And if you don't go write it down right now, then tomorrow you're trying to go, now what was it I heard on the show last night that was going to be so helpful for me? and you just can't quite grasp it. So you ladies then met at the support group. And what made you decide, so you became friends first, and obviously you talked a little bit about what both of you do, and what made you decide to collaborate and make a new presentation for both of your skills? They seem to dovetail really well.
They do. Well, and, you know, yeah. Barb brought up the idea, and then I immediately fell in love with it, because as a therapist, I like to make my therapy really functional. I want something that's going to carry over into real life. You know, if I have somebody do a worksheet in my office, well, I've basically proven they can do a worksheet that they're probably never going to do in real life. So I try to do therapy in a way that will make a functional difference in their life. And I like to try to take the things that they learn in therapy and then carry those over into a more functional setting. So it was just really the ideal place for me to do that. So I was excited about that.
And one thing in the group
Go on. Oh, I was just going to talk about the process.
Oh, okay.
So now you both think it's a good idea, but how do you go about it?
Well, in the groups, the way we do it is we meet for 90 minutes, and we usually do about 3 writes in those 90 minutes, and people will write, and then those people who want to can share what they've written.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them that the writing is the connection with themselves, and if they share it, that's the connection with other people. And as you know, a lot of times people with brain injury, and even the family caregivers, because I work with them too, they're very isolated. They don't know anybody else in that same situation. And so they feel alone, and they think no one understands them or knows what's going on for them. But they come to this group, and everybody understands, because they're all kind of going through similar things. So when they share with one another, and, you know, Dawn can talk about this too, but we've had some fantastic discussions in the group based on what one person wrote and shared, and everybody goes, yeah, I understand. I know what you're talking about.
Right, right. Well, there's a lot of feelings involved, and not everybody can articulate their feelings, but I could see where they'd hear somebody read, and it's like looking in the emotional mirror. Somebody's able to articulate what someone's been feeling, but either felt scared or ashamed or didn't know how to say it until they heard someone else articulate it. So what do you think about that, Dawn?
Well, you know, from a therapy standpoint, there's just so many benefits to it. But, you know, just what you said there, I think sometimes people aren't even aware of their feelings after brain injury. They know that, you know, they know that they're upset, they know that things have changed, but they may not even know the specifics until they hear somebody else journal about it. And then, you know, they kind of have one of those aha moments of, oh, that's what's going on with me as well. It's really interesting to me. A lot of the participants, like when they first start, they'll journal about the same thing over and over, and each journal entry kind of sounds similar to the last. But as they progress, it's really interesting to see that they tend to get a lot more insight, a lot more self-awareness, and just to kind of watch them progress is really a fun process.
I would think it would be kind of like exercising your body. If you haven't been someone who's been into writing or journaling, it's kind of putting one toe in the water, you know, when you're repeating that same same sequence that you were talking about, and then when you find out you're safe and capable of doing that, you maybe put the other foot in the water, and then it just, to me anyway, it just starts coming then.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest part for me is getting started. You know, getting started is hard. That's why I think what you guys do is so wonderful, because, you know, someone can come in and hear your presentation and it gives them the motivation to get started. You know, there's a lot of people out there sitting on the couch eating a candy bar that say, I really need to go to the gym. You know, there's a lot of people out there, you know, sitting down pent full of a lot of feelings about a lot of different things, you know, jobs, relationships, money, you know, the top three, and they're not talking to anybody about them. They don't want to worry someone in their family, maybe if it's about health issues that are going on or finances. And, you know, they aren't a believer in maybe going down the psychiatric trail, so they don't want to talk about it there. And they're just getting all pent up, you know, with these emotions. And even if we think we're hiding it, our behavior gives us away, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kim, you
right.
talked about having trouble getting started. I think that's hard for all of us. One of the nice things about the group is that it's 6 weeks long, so it does give them a good push and gets them really going so that they get kind of in the habit of journaling. But one of the things that Barbara has done, which I just think is phenomenal, in her book, which, by the way, is fantastic, I use it in therapy all the time, she has given these carrier phrases or these little introductory type sentences, and it's like a partial sentence, and then they can just go from there. And it kind of not only helps them, you know, get started on the routine of journaling, but it can kind of help them get started with their thoughts or their sentence. And Barbara can probably explain that better, but that's one of the things that I absolutely love about her book, is I think it's designed to get the person started and kind of get the flow going.
Yes, and again, everybody, I'm typing that in the website, but I'm going to go ahead and, I mean, in the chat room, I'm sorry, I'm going to go ahead and repeat. Barbara's book is called After Brain Injury, Telling Your Story. And I'll put the website, and it's www.barbarasthura.com is her website. And, of course, you can find her book at Lash Publishing. That's lapublishing.com. Okay,
and it's on
Barb?
Amazon also. Yes, it's also on Amazon. So that might be the easiest way to do it if people are interested. What Donna's talking about, I call a prompt. I mean, there's different names for it, but it's just a way, it's the beginning of a sentence. It's a phrase. Like an all-purpose prompt is, today I feel, or right now my heart tells me. You know, some way to just kind of get you started, get you focused. And, I mean, you can always veer off in another direction once you're going, but it gives you a starting point. And I've found that works really well. And in the book, there are six chapters with sort of a generalized arc, very generalized arc, of coming through the process of brain injury, like how the injury happened and then dealing with loss and grief and change. And at the end, it's looking at the positive and how to stay hopeful. And each chapter has different prompts, you know, based on the different exercises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought those were good, too, because it does force you to think a little bit
mm-hmm.
and have
mm-hmm.
a direction to go. You know, and again, that like Dawn said, back to the let's get started thing, that's a great way to do it with those prompts. I appreciated that in your book as well.
Well, thanks.
So now, are you guys traveling around? How, or will there be a day or has there been one and I missed it, where you guys might be doing some kind of an online course right now? Or are you just traveling to the association meetings? Do you really have yet a long-term plan for this presentation, maybe another book, or have you gotten to that point yet?
The journaling program itself is 6 weeks long, and we do that at Health South, so we don't do that anywhere else. But this past September, Dawn and I put our heads together because we were going up to the Indiana Brain Injury Conference, and Dawn will tell you more about this, but since she has begun sort of combining the journaling groups into some of her therapy with some of her clients, we thought it'd be great to do a presentation to other speech therapists and occupational therapists to tell them what the benefits are and how they could maybe start doing this. And so we hope
great
to get
idea.
Into the Washington BIA conference next year. We're working on a proposal for them. But so far we've only done it in Indiana, but we think it has application everywhere, so we would like to do it more.
Yes, I think it'd be a great idea. I was going to say at first, except you brought up a really good point, I was going to say some kind of a book or workbook or online type course for individuals, survivors, caregivers, but really if the professionals knew about these kind of things and could pass the word on, it would be a little bit more than what they're passing out right now. I think that would be, you know, very beneficial for everybody, whether you're the survivor or the caregiver. And Barb, I know in your case, is as shocking and surprising as it is for us to be walking around one day completely normal and find ourselves a survivor of a terrible brain injury, it's as shocking and unexpected to find yourself in the position of being a caregiver. And that must have been a really scary, trying time for you as much as for Ken, you know, not knowing how long that was going to be, what it was going to entail. Mm-hmm. Were you going to have enough, you know, either of you to ride that train, you know, to the end? Mm-hmm. They're pretty heavy stuff. And a lot of it you don't necessarily want to talk to each other about. Certainly some of it you do. But certainly some of them you probably absolutely shouldn't, you know. And, you know, again, I think that that's a great idea to pursue the professional groups, because, you know, if you could get them half as lit on fire about the program as you are, I think that that would be just wonderful, because that would be even a more buckshot kind of a method of disseminating the information to wide groups of people, you know, around the country and around the world, if the professionals were aware of this. So I wasn't at the Indiana conference, but do you have, maybe I saw that in the magazine, but the flyer that kind of, the synopsis that would kind of talk about your program, and it, like you said, it is a six-week program, but it, just to clarify for the audience, there really isn't anywhere that you can go and do this right now, except in Indiana at Health South.
Kim, there are several different groups around the country. I know in Washington State, there are several therapists, and the Brain Injury Support Group there, which are very active, they bought over the last couple years, I think about 100 copies of the book that they've distributed to their support groups, and they use it. And there are, you know, several other therapists around the country who use the book in whatever way they see fit, you know, with some journaling in the terms of a journaling group for some of their clients. So it's not only here, and of course people can always get the book and do it on their own, Sure. And I think that would be valuable. I think there's a different kind of energy when you do it in a group, but
yes.
It is possible to do it on your own too.
It's not just the energy of the group, but I think that, you know, from a therapeutic standpoint, which is obviously where I'm coming from, when mm-hmm. you do it as a group, it just creates more opportunities. Like, for instance,
yes.
We have one lady in our group who has issues with pragmatics, and what I mean by that is the social aspects of language. She interrupts. She doesn't know when it's appropriate to talk, when it's not. She doesn't know what subjects are appropriate and inappropriate. You know, she just kind of has some of those issues. So, and I would say that's probably her biggest issue. She's a wonderful person. She has a great heart, but she has a hard time fitting in. So she actually was coming to me for therapy, and we were working on pragmatics. So what we would do is in therapy, we would work on pragmatics, and we would talk about maybe interrupting that day, and we would talk about how not to interrupt and, you know, keep your eye focused on the leader and you don't change your focus until the leader changes the focus. And we talked about what that looked like. And then we would make a checklist together and we would go into the journaling group and then she could practice all of those skills in a real life setting with a whole group of people, which just made it so much more realistic and more functional. And so that's one of the ways that I incorporate it into my therapy, and I have just gotten excellent results by doing that.
I think that's a good idea, because while it's effective to do it yourself as a tool for yourself, you are also doing it through your pair of glasses, your own perspective and perception. And if your perception is askew, then there's some accountability in doing it in a group environment. Or a suggestion I'd make, maybe halfway in between, if you weren't able to do it in a group and you did do it on your own, it might be effective when you're done doing that on your own to discuss it with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether that would be a therapist or, again, a religious person you're affiliated with, probably something in confidence. I don't know that you want to go over it with your best friend, although I suppose if you feel comfortable doing that, you could. But, again, I think one of the things about the journal is, you know, you can write some of your most intimate thoughts and feelings down, and that's not necessarily something you'd share with everybody on the block, you know. And sometimes, you know, and we alluded to that a little earlier, Dawn, you don't know what your feelings are. Worse than not knowing what your feelings are is sometimes knowing what your feelings are
mm-hmm.
and feeling really bad or ashamed that you would feel that way. I know here in this environment that we hear a little bit of that, because we know on one hand as survivors we must feel gratitude and that our life is a gift and we were taken to the brink, and some of us a little further than that and gotten the gift of our life back for at least the second time. So of course, you know, we feel gratitude, but on the other hand, you know, as years go by with inconvenient or painful residuals, or even in the beginning, I didn't happen to be one of the why me people, but I know that there's a group of us out there that are why me people. But, you know, to be able to, you know, kind of make that just a cogent thought and be able to be completely honest, and that it's okay to be honest, because where you might not want to discuss those kind of things with someone in person because they sound horrible to you, you know, to even think them, you know, if you can get them written down, then again, I just think it lightens the load off the shoulders and puts it into the paper. And I think, I bet a person isn't surprised when they've gotten through that journal and they read back on it how a new clarity of vision comes from having done it that way and feeling free to be completely honest. I think that's probably what the hang-up is too, Dawn. At least it would be my guess about people writing a lot of the same stuff in the beginning is that haven't quite completely committed to trusting the process yet.
Right. And, you know, I think that's a great point that you make. A lot of times in the beginning, you'll hear people say, you know, oh, I'm just grateful, you know, that I made through the injury, or I'm just, and they'll say the same thing over and over. But one of the things that we stress in the group, it's okay to be mad.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to be sad. It's
yep.
okay to say,
mm-hmm.
why me? You know, those things are fine as long as you don't get stuck there. And
right.
I've told my clients this for years. You know, I tell my clients, all my clients, you have earned the right to say, poor me. You have earned the right to say, I don't like this. You have learned, you know, you've earned that right. Just don't get stuck there. And the nice thing about journaling is, if they are stuck in one of those areas, it's pretty apparent pretty quickly because every journal entry kind of sounds the same. And so then
yes.
what I find interesting is, you know, I've had clients that have been stuck in a phase for a long time, but they don't recognize it because they say it, they forget it, they say it again, they forget it. But when they journal and they go back and they read, they'll come to me and they'll say, I keep saying the same thing over and over, and I'm like, yeah, I know. So it's really good because it gives them some feedback that they weren't
yeah.
getting. And right. So that's what I love about it, because then they're able to see that for themselves and then consequently can correct that and move forward.
Right.
And Kim, too, one thing that happens is that ever since I started these groups back in 07, people tend to come back. I don't put a limit on the number of times people can come back. Like, Ken has come to almost all of them over the years, and that happened in Tucson. It's happening here in Evansville. And what's interesting to me is to watch how their perspective changes on what happened to them. Because,
uh-huh.
you know, they grow and they recover more, or they have more insights,
mm-hmm.
or they just learn more. And so, or they just get bored writing about it the same way all the time. So they start looking at it in new ways, and that, to me, has been really interesting because just with the benefit of time and new experience, they can write, like, the letter to their brain, or they can write about how what caused their brain injury, and it changes over time because there's so many ways you can look at things,
right.
and that's been really exciting to me to see that.
I'll bet. And I like the visual of picking it up and looking it around. It's like just the perspective changing
mm-hmm.
with time
mm-hmm.
and the circumstances. And I think that's a really good point, because there's so many issues you didn't even know were there in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right.
You just kind of start out with the facts of what happened, because I don't know, as a survivor, from the minute your bell's rung, you don't really know if you're on foot or horseback, so you can't get real deep right there. Right now you're just trying to figure out what day it is and can I tie my shoelace, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes some time to get into processing the feelings. I remember a friend showing me a piece of paper. They were like, it was a piece of paper like of these, I forget what they call them on the computer, emoticons, but let's call them happy faces for the sake of something else. It was a page that had, I don't know how many of them, let's say there was 25 of them, however many emotions there are. Maybe there were 50 of these little happy faces, but they all had these little expressions, and then underneath it, what the emotion was. And at the time that I saw that paper, not now, but at the time I saw it, I recognized angry and sad. And some of the emotions that I saw, I frankly didn't even know what those were. A lot of the other emotions I knew, and I felt sad that I couldn't say that I felt that. And that helped me know that things like sad can manifest, or fear, you know, can manifest itself as anger, you know. And I think a lot of times when you can write down, at least I think back just in my past of different times that I've done journaling, and it's kind of brought some clarity to me. And it's like you said, when somebody is repeating something over and over and over, they're like, wow, I spend a lot of time on that, you know. And so one of the things I do is take a look at that and go, well, what's that about? Because I'm not that angry all the time. And what happened to these other 45 emotions, you know? I am a human being. I must have these. So, you know, exactly where are these going? Well, some of these are going in the sad pot, and some of these are going in the angry pot, you know, but there really is a distinction between those things. And I think that for a lot of people in surviving a brain injury in recovery, that denial is one of the first humps to get over, as far as the fact that you might not get to just go back to the old me, like you've, you know, sprained your wrist and it's going to take some time to heal and then you're going to be good as new kind of a thing. You know, it takes some time to process that you might be in a period of redefinition. Now, you know, if it's something like middle age and we get a sports car, a suntan, and a gold chain, that was our choice of redefinition. But, you know, having a brain injury and being a survivor or a caregiver just isn't, you know, really what just jumps to the top of someone's mind when they think of, you know, redefinition more commonly.
Right.
You know, maybe marriages and divorces and things like that, changes in career. There's a lot of circumstances in our life. But, you know, on this particular show, we talk about the impact of brain injury. But I do want to say I'm going to take some questions here or comments. And the number is 424-243-9540. We're going to let the ladies make any closing statement they might have, and then I will be taking calls. So if you want to make sure you get an opportunity to make a comment or ask a question to Dawn or Barb, 424-243-9540. Well, it's really been a pleasure having you guys on tonight. I've had the opportunity to talk to Barb, and Barb, you've just been writing some really dynamite pieces in the magazine, in Brain Injury Journey, and you're a real asset to the publication. And Dawn, I haven't gotten to know you as well, but I've done some reading on you, and it's been a pleasure to get to meet and talk to you tonight. And it's so encouraging that the two of you were forward-thinking enough to merge your skill set and your gifts and create something that I think is really a dynamic and progressive tool of recovery. So since this show is called Recovery Now, and I know what some of the traditional forms are, and I'm not saying there isn't some traditional medicine that needs to happen during recovery, but for the long pull, I think what we need to make a life worth living, tools of recovery that we're going to carry with us the rest of our life, because really we're always recovering from something in a lot of different passages of our life. And, you know, just because we dodged the proverbial bullet once, you know, doesn't mean it isn't going to take us down like a house of cards the second time. So if we can get this awareness and knowledge ahead of time of the tools that are available to help us be a better me or a more refined me, then I think that's just wonderful. And you guys have really struck on a marvelous treatment plan.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say, as the leader of a brain injury support group, if there are any leaders of brain injury support groups out there, this is also something that you could do, you know, in your support group, is maybe just, you know, get a copy of Barbara's book, and then as a group, just pick, you know, a chapter and kind of go through it together and share what each other has written. And I think it'll probably bring the group a lot closer together, and it's a great activity.
Agreed. Barb, do you have anything before we take callers?
Yeah. Let's see. I just want people to know that there are no rules with journaling. I mean, you don't have to worry about grammar or spelling, any of that. It's yours. It's private. You can do whatever you want with it. You can draw in your journal. You can, like in my journal, sometimes I'll paste a card if somebody sends me a card I want to save, or if I find a poem
cool.
I like, I'll copy it in there. You can put whatever you want in it. And then if, you know, you keep it private, so you can be as honest as you can be. But if there's something in there that is really, really personal and you don't ever want anybody else to ever run across it, tear that page out and destroy it, because the benefit is in the writing. It's not in the keeping of it. So it helps you to get it out. But then if you feel really uncomfortable with it there, just tear out that page or those couple pages and burn it or shred it or do whatever.
Yeah, I've done the burning of the evidence before. It is very freeing to have gotten it out and then to turn it over to God or to the heavens or the universe.
Right, you
and
can
that's
make a
symbolic,
out of it, yeah.
Yeah, symbolic way of doing it, so that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do have a couple people on the line here, so I think this one is one of our new regular listeners. I could be wrong, but I think this might be Allie from Washington, D.C. Is this Allie?
It certainly is. Hello, everyone. How are you?
Good,
hello.
Allie. This is Barb and Dawn.
Hi, Barb and Dawn, and of course, Kim. I am sitting here on my way back home in transit from a brain injury support group meeting here in my town. And that's an idea that I think I'm really appreciative, first of all, of the body of work that you two have birthed and the clarity of purpose and the just refinement of crafting tools that have such practical application. And what I'm most struck with, and just to give you a little insight into who and what's going on, who I am and what's going on with me, I'm a multiple traumatic brain injury survivor. I've had six concussions, and they have all been frontal lobe and injuries. And so it leaves me very compromised in my cognitive faculties, even though I'm very, I don't like the word high functioning, even though my acuity is quite high, and I often don't look at all like, walk like, sound like, talk like I have challenges. I struggle throughout the day, and not every moment of the day, but certainly more often than not. It's extremely fatiguing. And I journal, not necessarily for the purpose of reflective writing, but it's interesting because I've been going through personal materials in my home office, and when I'm in therapy, Kim mentions that she's a lifer and what have you. I, too, am one as well. My last brain injury was about 20 years ago or something like that. My first was like 40 years ago. And, again, I've had six injuries. So during the times that I've been in therapy, because I forget to remember a lot and because I'm very tactile and kinesthetic in my learning style, even though I rarely go back to read the material, somehow having my hand move across the page with a writing instrument helps to clarify my thinking It helps to etch in my brain the recollection of what it is I am sharing, and it helps to create almost like guiding posts for my sharing. And so even though, and you mentioned something about writing is not for keeping, you know, it's for kind of getting it. You said something like the benefit in the writing is not in the keeping. It's mm-hmm. basically in the writing. Is that what you said? The benefit
yeah.
is in the writing, not in the keeping of
right.
it. And so
right.
that would be true, and I fully agree, unless you're someone like me who, and someone mentioned it earlier, I'm not sure which of you said it, a lot of us forget we've written stuff down, and it's very appalling, it's humbling, it saddens me, and it astonishes me. Like, I'm in amazement of how, as sharp as I am, I'm looking at material, and I literally feel like things from 10, 15 years ago are things that I just wrote last year. I'm seeing these repetitive things going on and on in my life. I'm thinking, am I still there? I know I'm not stuck. I've evolved so far beyond where I was. However, these are things that have not necessarily taken flight because they've been weighted down with the lead of unbridled thought or a thought that's not yet been emancipated
what?
Because I haven't yet the tools to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And in a constructed group like this, in a group that someone else gives structure to, because for persons like myself who live with brain injury and cognitive challenges that prevent us from being able to harness our thoughts better and to remember that we've done certain things, the exercises are lost as soon as we close the books and put them away. I forget all about the fact that I even did an exercise. And so the books are very helpful in chronicling my experience. And it's a pretty impressive body of work. And I have my journals because I am highly private. But if I'm no longer here, I'm like, what the heck? You know, my life is an open book. But for the time that I am here on the planet, My materials, my writings are very personal. They're very sacred because in them all I see such a beautiful unfolding of not only my divinity but my courageous spirit and lion-heartedness of staying in the fight and triumphing through just some of the darkest periods of my life. And I just wish I had someone to help give shape and form to my thinking and my emotional state of being, and also in crafting my own treatment plan, so to speak, because I believe each of us are our own best expert on how it is that we show up in the world, how it is that our challenges impact us, you know, but we may need some help in not only clarifying, but again, just helping us to emancipate our lives in such a way that we get out of this circuitous thinking, this ruminative thinking, or perseverative thinking, which these are all things that I know I tend to do, and there are oftentimes things that I do, and I'm not even aware of it unless someone comes to me out of that cycle, and I'm thinking, oh, wow, thanks, I didn't even realize I was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like you need a captain. I'm a great co-captain. I'm not the best. I'm not a captain-type person, but I'm a heck of a co-captain, but I recognize that it's not a weakness in me. It's that I recognize that's an area I'm not as strong in, and I am happy to defer to someone else who's better equipped to help me create the best life that I have the ability to live.
Well, that
yeah.
was very well said. I agree with everything that you said, and you articulated that very well. I don't really have a lot to add other than just I agree with, you know, everything you said.
Yeah, thanks, Allie. I think one of the things that is big out of that is that, you know, there's a lot of places, we don't have a support group here, and there's a lot of talk around the boulevard here at Brain Injury Radio about, you know, where you get resources on how to start a support group. And so I think that this is, like Allie pointed out, just a wonderful idea of a tool to incorporate once you get a template from whether it's your association or God, if there's not a support group, I don't know who you get it from. Maybe an association, an alliance, an independent living center. That's a whole nother discussion. But once you decide that you're going to start a support group, or if you already have one going, this is a really valuable, well, value-added, actually, benefit to a support group. So I think that's a really wonderful point, Allie, and I appreciate you bringing it up. I think at least one of you ladies, probably both of you, might know who I call our Southern Gentleman. This is Les Paul, our Tuesday night host, Les, Barb, and Dawn.
Hello, Barb and Dawn. It's really nice to hear you tonight. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. How are you?
I want to thank you both for coming on here tonight and talking about journaling. Just for example, my girlfriend she's a brain injury survivor, and she's an avid journaler. I've never known anybody that journals as much as she does. I jokingly say to her sometimes, you know, when the movie writers and authors come around and wanting to know who needs to make a movie, you're the one they need to talk to, because she's got enough written down for probably about 20 movies. Her life is a journal. I'm not trying to pick on her. It's actually pretty awesome, because she'll talk to me sometimes. She said, why haven't you journaled? I said, I do sometimes, but I don't do it as faithfully as her. I've tried different methods and things, but I just can't seem to find the time to do it like she does, and she gets on me about it. So that's one thing. And one other thing is, I'm on the board of two different brain injury associations, and I would love to see survivors stepping more forward. And there's a lot of survivors out there suffering that feel like they're alone and left out. I'd love to see them and the Brain Injury Association work together, and Brain Injury Radio, to find that missing meaning that a lot of people feel they have, just like I did. You know, Kim said she's 17 years. I'm about the same amount of time myself before I ever went back to work, and I was told I went from senior operator to falling beneath the cracks in the earth, is how I often described it, because I suddenly had no leadership, no direction, and didn't know who I was, and it was professionals and caregivers taking care of me and my mother and my family. But then after I got over my rehabilitation, it was like, okay, your life is over. I was 22 years old at that time, by the way, and it took me a long time to get involved with the Brain Injury Association of South Carolina and Georgia, and then finally find a job as a peer supporter, advocate, working as a person with a brain injury to help people as a peer mentor. And I just wonder if you have any ideas on strategies we could do to get more people who are survivors involved with finding a new meaning, because one of the heartbreaking things I see is I meet a lot of people in support group settings, in our two support groups and conferences and things, that tell me, my life ended, or my life, I don't feel like I have a purpose and I can't seem to get it. And I just wonder if you've met any people like that, or if you've had any similar circumstances with people.
Well, you know, Les, I think you make an excellent point, and this is a point that I make a lot of times to other therapists, is that so many times we get the client so involved in therapy, and they're supposed to do this and do that, and that becomes their life. And then all of a sudden therapy ends, and they feel like, you know, they're out there without a safety net. So I tell all of my clients, I'm not going to discharge you. You can't get out of therapy until you have something else in your life. It can be volunteer. It can be work. It can be brain injury support group. It can be something with your church. It can be something, you know, bridge club. I don't care what it is, but you have to find one activity that's going to get you out of your house and with other people before I'm going to discharge you. Now, don't tell them this, but I really can't keep them in therapy if they don't get anything. But I tell them that because it's so important to take what you've learned in therapy and then have an opportunity to use it. I can do therapy all day long with somebody and make them look really good. And if they go home and sit and do nothing, we haven't accomplished a single thing. So, yeah, I think that's so important. And even with, like, our brain injury support group, even though I started it and have ran it for years, it's really ran by the survivors. You know, I have various people that help out. They make the decisions. They decide what they want. You know, things like that. Find people that can do this part or that part really well. And I think that's empowering, too.
Yeah.
And then they feel more a part of it. So I think you're right. You know, you have to find some way to connect. And that's one of the things that I think is so beneficial about the journaling group is that I think the writing, like Barbara said, is imperative. But I think, too, coming together as a group and having a whole group of people that you trust enough that you can tell them your deepest, darkest secrets and you know they're going to support you, I mean, that's invaluable.
Yes, it sure is.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I just wanted to relate to that is a lot of people that come in, I work for Walton Options for Independent Living, which is an independent living center for people with disabilities, mm-hmm. of all disabilities, and I run a lot of brain injury-related things out of our office and had two support groups, but I keep telling people in the support group, I said, you know, one day I'm going to get old and somebody's going to need to take the reins. It's wearing me out. And they'll say, Les Paul, what do you want us to do? I don't want to tell you what to do at all. What are you going to tell me to do? Well, you decide. I don't want it to be a me group. I want it to be a we and us, like US for USA. And I believe there's power in that. I'd love to see every brain injury association and brain injury support group and, like, brain injury radio really join hands and work together and build the ultimate dynamic duo or team to really crack the glass ceiling wide open on brain injury and disability altogether to help people find that employment, pathway to employment or whatever life event they want to change, because I've had several people just this past week come into our office and say, you've got a job title. I don't have one. I said, I don't think about that much. He said, yeah, but you're called a peer supporter and advocate. Mine is just so-and-so. And I said, I'm just Les Paul. He said, no, you're a peer supporter advocate. You have a job and you get a paycheck. I want a pathway to a paycheck. I've been saying that a lot because people have been telling me that. And I would love to see that begin to happen for people with brain injury and other disabilities, too. And I thank you for coming on tonight. You've been a great guest.
Thank you, and thanks for your input. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, yeah, I think so, too. Thank you, Les Paul. Well, Don and Barb, I told you I'd keep you an hour, hour and a half, and we're a little bit over that, but I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight and sharing with us this exciting new recovery tool. And I think those kind of things are divinely inspired. I was listening to the way that you're meeting and then this project unfolded, and just think it's meant to be, and wish you the best of luck with it. And I'm with them. I think that it should be a mandatory part of a support group. It just a very valuable tool. So, again, everybody, you can find Barb's book, After Brain Injury, Telling Your Story, at Lash Publishing or Amazon. And I did put her website in the chat room earlier, and it's in the program notes as well. So thank you so much, Barb and Dawn, for all of the work you do and for being willing to share it with us tonight.
Well, thanks, Kim. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on. Really appreciate it.
Yes.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right. Well, you guys have a great Thanksgiving. And the first thing on our gratitude list in here tonight will be that we had you guys on as guests.
Well, thank you.
Well, that's sweet. Thanks.
All right.
Have a good Thanksgiving, too.
All right. Good night, you guys.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, everybody. That was Barb Sahara, excuse me, and Don Westfall, and wow, they even motivated me. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I had been having a case of the blues, and when I listened to my own advice about adding back in an additional tool of recovery, that may just be the one. So I appreciate them being on tonight, and hopefully they'll be back. Barb is a regular on the show and on Brain Injury Radio, and also in Lash Magazine, Brain Injury Magazine. You'll see her a lot. I think we're going to take a little break. I like to kind of shift between our guest and the second part of the program, so you have a little time to absorb or take some last notes on the guest before we move on to the second part. But I told a story one time to you guys not too long ago. I was downtown in our old market area, and I had my camera, and there was a saxophone player on the street corner, and it was in the middle of the day, during a weekday. And I don't normally make it a habit of taking pictures of people. You could probably get in some trouble doing that. But for some reason, I was halfway across this cobblestone road, and he was sitting on a step playing, and there were some people around him, and I raised my camera. And just as I raised to shoot him, he turned his saxophone around and was blowing it right at me. Well, I stopped to talk to this gentleman, and he's part of a band, and I talked to the person who is the leader of their band, Todd Young, and he told me an incredible story. He, like so many of these indie musicians that I'm fortunate enough to come across, coincidence, he has had a traumatic brain injury. But he's also been in the music business for a long time, and I'm older than a lot of you out there, and I told you I grew up kind of in the disco era, but this person actually played with a few different bands some of you might have heard of back in the day, Weather Report, Tower of Power, and George Clinton, Bow Wow Wow, Yippee-Oh, Yippee-Ay. And so their band now, I'm going to play you, that all led up to kind of a segue. I probably took the long way around, but when you're journaling, I talked about the difficulty in beginning, and the name of this song is Beginnings. And the band now is called, and I'll type it in, it's kind of an interesting name. I'll type it into the chat room for you, but it's nanitetechnology.com. So if you want to look this up at their website, it's www.nanitetechnology.com. Technology. And this is called the MK7 Project, but the song is Beginnings. So let's all look at making a new beginning, maybe on stepping up our journaling. And that was the brand new first played on Brain Injury Radio, MMK7 Project, or nanitetechnology.com, and the song was Beginnings. I thought that was cool. Kind of reminds me of a jazz brunch. We seem to have just about every kind of genre of music that there is here, but one of the things that I listen for, and this is the coolest position for me to get to be in as a host, and we've gotten the freedom to be able to structure our shows however we want to, and a lot of the hosts structure their shows a little bit differently. Me, because of my attention span and my sensory overload and working pretty hard on interviews, you know, I try to do the interview for an hour and a half, between an hour and 2 hours, and then kick back a little bit because it's bedtime where I'm at, and gets to be kind of late. And so I thought that it would be neat because I think, and so does Les Paul and a lot of the rest of us around here, that music is very therapeutic. I sought out to find indie musicians months ago, and interestingly, I found not only some really neat people and some cool stories, and a whole nother Brain Injury Radio was one pocket that I was working in that I had never been in before, and suddenly being an old groupie at my age, out trolling these bands to let them to let me play their music on my show. But there's some really, really great people, and it's been a very fun part of this job too, and I hope that you guys have enjoyed it. I've got some new things tonight. Again, MK7 Project is one. I've got a few more of their jazz tunes we'll play later. But I picked up a new song from, I call them our bad boys. They're in Joyzy, Francis Jones and the Saviors. There's a couple of songs that I play for you regularly, but I have never played this one for you before, and I think I will. Now, you talk about a difference in genre. We've gone from the smooth jazz right into our bad boys in Jersey with a song called Same Kind of Freedom.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. Natural queens with keyboard teeth, we got it hard in lyrically. Seeking salvation, true love and recovery. Standing on the moon, transformation line with mademoiselles and American pastime. They all ache with the same kind of freedom. Got in the sweat, the music confused, dropped on the dime, stone by two. Looking at mirrors, shit is someone's in it. At the bag of bonbons, the wolf pack was in on the getaway car. Like cigarette packs with veterans art. The president, they didn't care. The innocent bride showed the rings off there. Delirious with the same kind of freedom. am impressed with you, they're confused. Dropped on the dime, the stone by a few. Looking at mirrors, wishing it was someone new. Oh, oh, what do they know? Oh, oh, what do they know? Dark leaves around me, doing rides on the balcony. Lord Bacon performed Shakespeare to nobody. There was skin knees under my jeans. I lost my jacket and all my money. I didn't really know why I was headed up this. Conductor knew I was lost. He knew somebody changed my sugar to salt. He knows I'd be with the same kind of freedom. Oh, oh, what does he know? Oh, what does he know?
That was Francis Jones and the Saviors, and Same Kind of Freedom. And that was preceded by, pardon me, getting a frog, MK7 with New Beginnings. Or no, I'm sorry, they aren't new, they're just beginnings. Hi, Les Paul and Allie. What'd you think of the guest and the new artist?
Awesome. Fantastic.
I liked it a lot. Yeah, it's a different vibe of music. I like it. And I really was into the interview with your guest, even though I was on the road. And you know what? I misspoke. I said I was coming from a brain injury support group meeting. That's not true. I forgot. I was intending to go. I had a training today. And then because of seeing how the mind jumps.
You're too honest. You shouldn't have told us. I'm playing with you.
But no, I mean, I'm being, you know, beautiful in all of my perfect imperfections, you know. I mean, it's just how we show up sometimes. And, you know, I literally fully believe that I was coming from a brain injury support group meeting, and I was pumped up as if I did. That was really strange. Anyway. But I'm still pumped up because I had
that.
A training. Yeah, I had a training today, and I also connected with a friend of mine who also is a brain injury survivor, and we talked about a lot of things that were very relevant to a lot of things that we go through. And so, yeah, but I'm a fan and huge proponent of process work, and that's exactly what the ladies were talking about tonight. And
yeah.
Just, again, being able to harness the thoughts, because that's one of the things that I struggle with most. My brain feels like, I don't know what you call, it's not a gaggle. What do you call, like a herd of wild horses, you know? And
yeah.
When they're off to the races, they're off to the race, and they're just gone. They're born to be free. And
yeah.
I can't get them back in the barn. And, you know, sometimes I forget I even had a barn. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, that's right, I did have a barn. And I did have horses. I literally forget. It's the strangest thing, but I get it, but it's very frustrating, and one can easily see if you extrapolate from, you know, just these little incidences that I share, how that adversely impacts your life on a day-to-day basis. It's very challenging.
Yeah.
It's very challenging. So,
I said it sure is, and I was going to just add that each and every one of us with a brain injury has a slightly different take on it. So you meet Allie, and you meet one brain injury. You meet me, you meet another one. You meet Kim, you meet another one. You meet Joe Schmo, whoever it is, and it's another one that's each one of us distinctively different but similar in some ways. And that's why brain injury is so hard to pin. They hear us talking right now, and it's like, you guys don't have brain injuries. You don't sound like anything's wrong. You sound phenomenal sometimes. What are you talking about? And then here we go, struggling to remember what we just thought of. It floors me sometimes how people say, wow, Les Paul, you did great. And I said, what are you talking about? I didn't even remember what I just said.
Exactly.
I wonder if you guys ever have this problem, if you're speaking publicly or someone just asks you to tell your story or something, it takes so much energy to tell the story, and you can tell it accurately, that when you finish, it's like, what did I just say? I don't remember. Can somebody tell me? That's me sometimes.
Me too. It's amazing that many younger people could be talking like that. It sounds like an Alzheimer's ward, for God's sake. I mean, none of us seem to remember very well, and we're young people. That's what brain challenges will do for you.
That's for sure.
Exactly. And it happens to me quite frequently, and I share it with you all candidly that I have grown to feel more confident in my speaking voice, meaning I trust the feedback that I get, that what I say often makes sense, but I can't tell. And I had amnesia and aphasia. I really struggle with that, and I've come a long way in my, ability to communicate. However, there seems to be a disconnect. I can't, it's almost like the, it feels like typesetting in like the printing industry. You know, you put the characters down, but they're not anchored, you know, and as soon as someone flips the page, they all fall out, you know, and so when you flip it back over, like, oh, wow, wait a minute, hold on, let's turn that back again. What were we doing on that previous page? Well, I don't even know, because they've all fallen out just simply by virtue of me turning the page, not intending to dump them out, but that's what happens. And so it's very frustrating, but I have learned to be more comfortable in the lack of knowingness about what it is I just freaking said, and if it even made sense, because I a lot of times gauge my communication on body language. It's a very full body experience. Just doing it auditorily is very hard for me, because I can't gauge when I've made my point.
You said one key word that I use sometimes as a strategy. A strategy.
Good. I like that word.
Where did that word come from?
I did too.
Pretty cool.
I almost got wiped out what I was about to say. Oh, my God. Oh, you said one very extremely important word, amnesia. Mm-hmm. The amnesia of brain injury is so rarely mentioned. When I described my memory loss to try to show someone, they said, I just don't get it. I have the same thing. And I said, no, you don't. You might have some minor short loss, or you might be just think your memory is just lost sometimes, but for the most part, unless you have some kind of a disabling condition that causes it, you don't even understand what we're talking about. And I'll go get the definition of amnesia and bring it to people in our support group meeting. I've done that, and I've done it in my own office when a new employee was hired, and they kept saying, I just don't understand, Les Paul. I see you go do all these different things, and you do them very well, and all of a sudden, one phone call, you don't remember what everything you were doing was, and you're just a mess. And I'm like, wow, what happened? I think you're faking it. One lady said to me, I said, I'm faking that? Oh, my goodness. And I went to my computer, and I typed amnesia, and she said, why'd you type that? And I said, it's one word that defines what short-term memory loss is in a better way for a brain injury survivor than you can by using 500 words sometimes. And I don't believe that. Amnesia, they don't call brain injury amnesia. And then she looked it up and she said, wow, that sounds like you. I'm sorry. And it went for a long time. I said, I'm waiting for the apology. Keep going. and was just playing with her. But we have to be out there and showing the people out there that we're out here, but we're real, and that we're ready to make a difference. Everybody go silent on me? Hello?
Oh, no. Was my mic off?
Yes, it was.
I'm sorry. I was letting you finish. I muted Allie for a minute, although I was thinking I needed to mute me because we're going to have to I thought we were going to have to go beat the dog. Just kidding. Everyone out there knows what an animal lover I am. I post pictures of my dogs
yes,
every
you
minute.
Are.
Tonight they all got new sweaters, and so they were styling out in the yard. Got some good pictures up on Facebook today, but one of them just
I
went running out. Well, you know, my husband, oh, you did? My husband,
yeah.
You know, goes to bed at 8, and what's it? It's 11 here, 9, 10, 11. So it's 3 hours after he's gone to bed, and Libby just ran out the dog door and was barking like a maniac, and I'm on the radio and can't do anything about it, and he was asleep, so she woke him up, and both opened doors at the same time and just kind of looked at each other. The things that go on in the back room in radio, you just...
That's a whole other side story.
Yeah, you just never know. I was trying to mute me, and I did, and I forgot again, which is usual. But in any case, you know how that happens. And now I had to do it to Les Paul because, I don't know, I just felt that thing coming up that I've had a problem with lately, and that is the audio belch.
Somewhere in middle America, right to the heart of matter. Heart didn't matter.
Yeah, I wonder where this host is from. All I can tell you, because I'm in an kind of undisclosed location, is that I'm somewhere in middle America, and you guys actually saw the t-shirt, didn't you, that I not only went there but got the t-shirt, also put that on Facebook the other day and got my poor husband wearing one, so we're both like we're tourists or something, and we live here, Omaha, somewhere in middle America, and so from now on until I get what I want, that's just going to be what we're going to fashion as my audio belch. But some of you might have seen on Saturday night, or I was late actually coming into Keith Anthony's, that I had an opportunity to see my friend John Cruise play. And again, he's my friend that has the inoperable tumor on his brainstem, and has a lot of talent, and I haven't given you guys a Facebook thing before. By the way, for those of you that were in the chat room, I did type in the Facebook page, if you happen to be coming from there, for Dr. Francis Jones, and up above that for MK7, and also gave you their website, so if you like their music and you appreciate them, playing, allowing me to play their music, then it would be great if you would thank them for me. In any case, when I saw John this week, the 38 doses of radiation and working 10 hours a day as a painter has really taken its toll on him, but So far, his dexterity on that guitar and his voice is sweeter than ever. This is a song that he wrote, a couple of songs really, that really move me, that he sings when I met him, geez, way back about 15 years ago. But they were dedicated to his wife, who was brutally murdered when their only child daughter was very young, and needless to say, he's got a great range and wrote some pretty heartfelt lyrics at a time when he was working through some difficulty and change in his life, like we were talking about here. And now, probably almost 25 years after his wife, he's facing his own mortality at this time. So hopefully John's going to be a guest on the show soon. But in the meantime, I hope everybody will send up a prayer for John. And he doesn't have a Facebook, but Les Paul, you might want to do this because you've heard him a lot. But on Facebook, so you're at facebook.com/ John Cruz Band, and it's C-R-E-W-S. So J-O-H-N-C-R-E-W-S-B-A-N-D, and I'll type that in the chat room. So for any of you listening that have heard Palm of Your Hand or Lover with a Feeling, By My Side, or this song I'm going to play in a minute, it would be really awesome if you would boost John's spirits and tell him you think he's got some pretty great music. This particular song is called Sweet Tennessee.
You can't stop the winds of change. You can't turn the sands of time. Doors, they open up before your eyes. A brand new world for her to find. She's with the captain of her soul, sailing on a sea of light, taking her home. If I could just one more time bring her back to me, yeah, we need one more time in sweet Tennessee. I found myself, then I found love. It's kept me strong since you've been gone. We think about you every day. Our love for you lives on. She's with the captain of her soul, sailing on a sea of light, taking her home. If I could just one more time bring her back to me, yeah, we'd meet one more time in sweet Tennessee. You know our daughter grew up true and strong. You gave her the will to carry on. She's a life like you. And me, I just play in an old blues band, waiting at the station for the train to carry me home again. She's with the captain of her soul, sailing on a sea of light, taking her home. If I could just one more time bring her back to me, yeah, we'd meet one more time in sweet Tennessee. Just one more time, bring her back to me. yeah. We meet one more time in sweet Tennessee. We dance in the moonlight of sweet Tennessee. We'd make love one more time in sweet Tennessee. Sweet Tennessee, sweet Tennessee, sweet Tennessee, sweet Tennessee, sweet Tennessee, sweet Tennessee.
That was John Cruz Blues, and my thoughts and prayers are going up to him. And I was really blessed when I first met him. His daughter Lindsay was, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12, and I hadn't seen her in all those years. I hadn't seen him, and she's a grown-up, just had her 30th birthday with three little children of her own now, and so I've been corresponding with her on Facebook. John doesn't get on there very much, but he's got a lot on his plate right now, and I hope that he gets more gigs around town, and hope that he gets the opportunity. He said that the style of his music, while he's been going through this facing of his mortality through getting the news about an inoperable brain tumor, finding out what the brain stem does, what all it's responsible for, and the fact that the radiation wasn't going to get rid of it. They were just hoping, best case scenario, that it won't let it grow. And I think it was so prophetic in that song that he just sang about the captain of her soul talking about his wife who crossed over so many years ago and waiting for the train to carry him home. I listened to him sing that in person, and I looked at him, I watched him, and thought about, I don't know, you write a poem, you write a song, you read something that's meaningful to you for one reason, and then it becomes like that perspective we were talking about earlier. You get a new perspective on it because you've turned it and looked at it from another direction. And I don't know, I'm praying that that tumor stays in exactly the same size that it is. It will really hurt to lose John. So hopefully that won't happen for a really long time. But I'm going to grab my green tea real quick, and then I'll come in and unmute the mics. I think I'll kick it up a little bit, though. I don't want to bum you guys out. It's just beautiful music. But so we'll do something with a little more kick to it. And I think I'll do one more by John, because he certainly maintained his spirituality, his sense of hope, his sense of humor, and his ability to jam. This is By My Side by John Cruz, and we'll be back in 4 minutes, 27 seconds, and I'll open the mics.
But there's no one
John Cruise Blues and By My Side. I think that is pretty cool. Pretty cool. So what do you think, Les Paul?
Dang, that's smoking.
He is smoking
wow.
hot. There's a song
Fire
I'll play later.
Off of his guitar when he was playing that song.
Oh, I know. He is a really good guitar player. And the one song that I want to, I'll play later, that I recently got the rights by the owner, master owner, to play just for personal use. You know, it's really funny the way, well, you know, just the way things work, and we talk about this sometimes. MK7 that I met that did the jazz tune earlier,
yeah.
I asked
really
him
good.
Where, yeah, yeah, he's really good. And he'll probably be on too. But anyway, I asked him where he recorded here in town, and he said he had his own recording studio. And so I'm thinking of John Cruise in the back of my mind, wanting him to play this, sing this one song.
Oh, that'd be sweet as heck. That'd be awesome.
And I talked to MK7 is Todd. I talked to Todd about that today, and I explained what the situation was. And he told me if we could get, see what we'd really need. I know even doing a cappella, having his friend Bucky harmonize, he still needs Guitar George. Well, Guitar George has a big ego and would probably want a lot of money. I'd have to think of a way to get him in on the project, but then I think Todd would be willing to help me get it done. And isn't it amazing, the interconnectedness?
Well, Kim, I'll say it this way. I really believe if you were back in the day, you could have caused a real-life Beatles reunion. That's the kind of thing you're working on.
Oh, yeah. I explained it. You know, it's what he's got going on is pretty serious business.
Yeah.
It isn't going to go away, and they don't have hope of getting rid of it. And I'd like him to be able to, right now, you wouldn't know, except to look at, you know, he looks really tired. Like I said, he's about 62, and he's a painter. He's been painting 10 hours a day after going through 38 radiation treatments.
Wow.
I mean, is that some stamina or
what?
It's amazing
he can do anything. That is amazing. God
exactly.
bless him.
I know, and then he does these gigs, and he's not lacking there right now. So there's just a couple things I'd like to see done. It would seem criminal to me if they weren't. I don't know. Yeah, I think
I
a lot of us can get our mindset on things. I don't know, Allie, you ever get your mindset on something and you can't let it go until you somehow either make it happen or are completely exhausted with the attempts?
I was going to try to make a funny by saying I just can't relate to that, but absolutely, my recovery journey. Absolutely, you know, and I can understand your big-heartedness and wanting to do all that you can to support your friend and promote his work. And my heart just goes out to him and his family, and I will definitely keep them in my prayers, my thoughts and my prayers, and just hold them in, you know, in spirit and hold them in
Thanks.
The light, because I know for a fact he's not working that hard because he wants to and just loves it that much.
Right.
He probably has to. And so
he does.
My heart aches and bleeds just imagining, and we all have our own crosses to bear and have faced our own seemingly insurmountable challenges, but I cannot imagine that kind of back against the wallness, you know. But then again,
yeah.
you know, I'm living my own, but I've learned through my own experience that we are not to judge another person's pain as any less or greater than our own. But that doesn't mean that I can't have deep empathy and compassion and heart-aching for the situation. Thank you.
Yeah. Me too, because, yeah, that's right. It's been funny because I saw him, you know, I know what he looked like when I saw him regularly. You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you expect a person to age a little okay, but I mean, you know, he's lost a lot of weight and he looks tired, you know, he looks really tired. And I noticed a difference even between a month ago when we saw him and this last weekend. In fact, I've posted pictures on Facebook because I got a picture with him. I made sure to a month ago, and that will be a treasure. And it's funny because this song that I want him to sing isn't even his. It's someone else's that I heard him sing, but it's funny because there's been a couple of remakes of this song by famous people, and I'm telling you, I mean, it would have to be just for personal use. I wouldn't be able to play it, but I want it.
He's one of those people that should have been one of those famous people. Really, he's awesome.
He really is.
As I'm sitting here, and this may not be the forum to share this very personal opinion on things, but I'm just wondering if part of the drive is his determination to not transition, leaving his best works, you know, in the ground kind of a thing. You know how they say, you know, the cemetery is full of dreams and all sorts of those things. I can't remember, great inventions and blah, blah, blah. And
right.
A lot of times people, when they're facing that degree of mortality literally at your doorstep, we sometimes may feel a sense of urgency to really go full throttle and to get her done, you know, and just to make it happen and just pedal to the metal it, you know, and I want to make sure that I birth these projects. However, in so doing, it weakens our immune system, making it that much more difficult for us to champion through whatever is going on that's creating.
You were right about the work,
too.
The 10 hours a day of painting
is incredible.
Out of necessity and bills.
Yeah, I can't imagine. You know what, as I'm thinking about it. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to say the gigs are, you know, few and far between, and he enjoys doing them. But now it's almost after what he has to do out of necessity from the mounting medical bills and 10 hours of painting, and he was doing that gig Saturday night we listened to and then was going to be doing several power washing of houses the next day on Sunday because he didn't work on Saturday and he just looked so tired. And yet he's up there and he could transform himself, you know, into the musician, but he had to...
That's where the music therapy ties in.
Yeah.
It's his therapy. It's his medicine. He knows music is a deep part of his life, and even though he's up there suffering and in pain probably and feeling bad, that brings out that last bit of energy and brings out that good energy, that soul food we all need.
Yeah, so it's nice if you'd be able to drop him a note because he's really glad to hear that his music is even being played. You know, this CD was a decade old, and he hasn't had an organized band for a while. But he's gone through his spiritual awakening. I think he's already a pretty spiritual person, but he had his day of the party, and that's for sure. But, you know, he's gone through a transformation through this process of what's gone on, and I think he's written a lot more gospel, spiritual kind of music. Mm-hmm. And he really wants to record that. You know, he wants to get another disc down of that. And he does, I think he's such a good writer, such a soulful writer and musician. He does the guitar, the writing, and blows a mean harmonica when it's one of those kind of songs. He's got a Mustang Sally that had me up on the floor dancing every single time I heard that. It was pretty funny. You know, my husband, luckily they didn't play it the other night, but I was picturing my husband back in the day, which he wasn't in my mind. I didn't even know him yet when I met John, and how I would be out there dancing to some of those songs that he was playing. And heck, if my date didn't want to dance, I'd get up. You know, there's always the three girls that get up and start dancing that don't have a date with
them.
That
would be me,
you know. I'd get right up there with those ladies, man, and be up there jamming, and I was like in my own little world, you know. It's like, who cares, you know, if the music moves you, it moves you, you know.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm also thinking of the fact that it also speaks to man's search for meaning, and I'm sure because this is something that he is gifted with, music and artistry and bringing beauty to the world in that genre. It's almost like legacy making, you know, just feeling like before the light dims, I've got to get it out there.
Yeah.
Very much.
Part of the legacy. Huh?
Very much so. Sorry, I got strangled a little bit.
Yeah, swallowed a frog too. Yeah, no, I feel like it too. I've thought about journaling that. I guess I've been in kind of it, and maybe, you know, I know, Les, you probably do, and Allie, you talked about it the other night, but, you know, at the holidays times, I think, you know, there's some missing people that were a part of our life for a long time during these traditions. And it's hard to go through the shift. You know, there was one year that I think two out of my 54 years, I couldn't do the traditional Thanksgiving deal. And I was in a lot of trouble one Christmas, and my mom's very powerful. She canceled it for the world. There was no more Christmas. Because I was a heathen.
No more at all, huh?
But, yeah, that was a rough year. Been a while, but it was a rough year. And but they were there still, you know. They were there, and the tradition was going to go on, and I think, you know, we miss people in waves as our grief gets down the road a piece. You know, there's just I'll call it one of my little shiny things, you know, something you'll see that'll give you a snapshot reminder, but you're able to, you know, move through it without the ache. And I think around the holidays, it's harder to not feel that ache and a little more emotional intensity about people that we've lost for one reason or another. It's like, I don't think revisiting it in a bad way, because I don't think it's something we do on purpose, but it's a feeling that comes if you spend enough years, you know, with certain family members, let's say, and certain traditions, and those change, then it's something that's obviously missing at this time of year, more obvious than others, I guess, like what you were talking about the other night, Allie, the feeling, you know, sticking out, not fitting, and sometimes changes like that.
Right.
It sure is.
I don't want to continue to revisit the issue, but I know I'm going to forget to email you, Kim. Here in my area, getting back to your friend John Cruz,
this is a time where I think it's almost like you got to circle the wagons with whatever troops you have available to you, and whereas he cannot be all and do all for himself, perhaps we can, you know, do whatever we can to help, you
That's
know,
right.
lighten his load, and I'm definitely willing and interested. I'm going to try to remember to follow through with it, to drop him a line.
And I
don't know how
too.
Much I appreciate him and his music. The other thing is just brainstorming ways to create greater resources for him, because in my area there is a program called Food and Friends, and every area has something of its equivalence. And so the thing is, for persons who are actively, I don't like using words like fighting, you know, but who are actively being challenged with life-threatening illnesses such as cancer or whatever the case may be, they provide a home delivery service where they'll bring healthy, nutritious, balanced meals made by, I mean, certified, bona fide, just amazing chefs. You open the containers, and I'm talking about these biodegradable, like corrugated type, not card, they're kind of cardboardy like, but it's some kind of paper material, but it's really
mm-hmm.
thick. I mean, it's really quality stuff. And you open and it looks like it came from a 5-star restaurant who's now doing carryout.
Wow.
It's amazing. And things like that are such a tremendous help for persons who feel like the weight of the world is on their shoulders. That's one less thing. I mean, that's a lot to do. You got to cook and feed yourself, too, and the food doesn't just sprout in your backyard. You got to go to the grocery store. I mean, it's certainly a lot easier than, you know, frontier living, but what I'm saying is it still can
no,
feel
you're right.
like the weight of the world on your shoulders at every turn just to survive, and just surviving through eating, something that many of us take for granted because we may live in family structures where there's someone there to help pick up the slack. But if there isn't really anyone in his life like that who's looking out for him, you know, making sure that he gets the sustenance needed to help support his body and his physiology in doing what it can in order to create greater sustainability for him,
yeah.
then
yeah.
it's that much easier for him to kind of not be as triumphant.
Right.
Or
right.
Victorious.
Well,
mm-hmm.
and that's for sure. That's one that I hadn't thought of. That's very practical and
is
a good idea. And I mean, his daughter's got her hands. I mean, she just had a baby, and she's got two
mm-hmm.
other babies. Her hands are pretty full, but there's a couple different things that I can think of, like, you know, you talking about going to the grocery store and things like that. And, you know, I don't see why one of these, now I'm getting to know so many of the local musicians because of this, if there wouldn't be some way I could organize maybe a benefit concert where some
yeah,
of
exactly.
these guys get together like at the Fireman's Hall or something.
Yeah.
And give him some kind of a lifetime achievement award, something like that.
Yeah. To give him his flowers
so
while
awesome.
He can smell them. To give him his flowers while he can smell them, you know.
All a good
he
idea,
appreciates
but
them.
What I want to do there is I really want to, you know, Gary has the ability to make him a basic website. You've got to have that as a marketing tool if you're going to.
Yeah.
Not that the marketing is important to him, but if he were to have a website and I were to help him, if I were to find a way to help him get that CD out,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to do that.
I think it needs to be done so bad. It does.
What about managing it, though? Because sometimes, you know, success can come and we're not prepared to handle it. So, okay, let's just say he starts getting hits and now the requests are pouring in. Is there someone to handle that demand? I mean, is it even a value add for
for him and to him is kind of what I'm wondering.
Well, he can put his tunes like all the rest of these people have their tunes on iTunes, you know. I mean, at least they're able to sell them. There's not a lot of margin. I mean, you buy a song on iTunes, it's between 99 and $1.69 per song, and then Amazon, you know, Apple keeps whatever 40% of that. So, you know, you're looking at a lot of merchandise to be getting any money out of it. But to have been in the band, you know, been singing and doing this all his life, and at one time gigs were enough to pay the bills, to having this health issue kind of make that stop in doing these piecemeal gigs for the money.
But think about it. We're broadcasting around the world. Maybe someone, news media person, could hear this and make it a story worth about someone's life worth living and someone who's giving back even in their time of sadness and illness and giving freely their music to people who have brain injuries and other disabilities. And I just think there's probably somebody out there floating around that might pick this up and say, wow, if somebody could just talk to that person and say, what can I do to make this go viral on YouTube and Facebook and all the different things and come up with a way to sell it. I'm a dreamer when it comes to things like that. It doesn't always work that way. Most of the time it doesn't. But
I think it's a great dream. I think it's a great dream because the rest of the artists here, all except one, the Hard Times Band, you know, they are in a position where they're on Amazon and iTunes, and no, it's not enough to supplement a day job for some of them. A lot of them are doing music as their career, but at least they're selling their stuff. John, in the midst of everything else, was glad to hear from me, found out what I was doing, and said, oh, you can play anything of mine, you know that. You didn't have to find me to get permission. You know, he said, I'm just so grateful and blessed that my music is even being heard a decade later.
The cool thing is you were looking for musicians. He turned out to be your contractor, right? And then,
no, that's the Hard Times Band.
I'm sorry,
John,
I got him mixed up for a minute. You're right, I got him mixed up. Sorry.
No,
but
John, I met in a
story,
restaurant.
His recovery story then becomes a big thing on Brain Injury Radio because he's going through a hard time right now.
Yeah, and with his brain. Yeah, I know. That's what I think every time I see him, and he looks a little worse like the other night. And that's why it was so funny when I talked to Todd Young today, that MK7 project, and he said he had his own studio. When I asked him where he recorded, I came out and told him what I wanted, and he told me if I could get the players together. I know John is willing. It's George. It's Guitar George. It's finding a way to deal with Guitar George, which I think I can do. I hope. Then if and Bucky would do it, and that's all. They were just doing it acoustic the night that I heard it. They didn't even need all the rest. So, you know, if the three of them weren't getting paid and they were just willing to sing the one song anyway, you know, then with the studio equipment, they could adjust the rest. And then I don't know who John would want to, because I don't know his new material. You know, if he's going to need a gospel choir, or I'm not sure, you know, what exactly it's going to be like, but I'll be real anxious to hear it. That's for sure.
This kind of reminds me of a couple of weeks ago, my show was called Hey Everybody Out There. You remember that? Where I named it after a Paul McCartney song, a brand new song of his at the time. It's only been out like 3 or 4 weeks at the most. And therefore, by the grace of God, go you and I.
Yep.
We're the brightest objects in the sky. And it goes on, do some good before you say goodbye. That part right there really hit me when I saw that song. And it's kind of like our anthem tonight. It doesn't have to be that song, but the words, just do some good before you say goodbye. That means something about, I hope all of our lives I can tell each one of us has that kind of spirit where we want to do some good before we do say goodbye, because we've all faced that near-death experience sometimes on multiple levels and never thought we'd be here. And now we're talking about someone else who is facing that very thing. And like that song says, hey, everybody out there, lean in and help. It's time to put that substance called real into the motion of helping another person, just because.
Do you think that American Music Association, or the thing that you do, do they ever give out
grants? I was thinking about that earlier.
The AMTA.
I was going to talk with you about that because I don't want to make it too technical on the radio. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, I don't want to put them on the spot or anything, but I mean, this one thing in Omaha, Nebraska, it shouldn't cost very much, a few thousand, couple thousand dollars maybe. I'll help with some, but I wonder if they give any kind of grant, a Make-A-Wish grant in the name of music, for music that's good.
When I went there, I actually was given a grant to go there. I didn't have the money to pay for it. It was something like $2,000. And when my supervisor wrote a letter to them saying Les Paul Morgan came out of a coma and was expected to die when he heard the Beatles song Yesterday playing, she said in the letter, she said he, more than anybody, needs to go to the Music Therapy Association and experience it. And she wrote directly to the director, whose name is Al Bumanis. Al Bumanis is his name, of the AMTA, American Music Therapy Association, and he granted that. I was treated like I was King Tut when I was there. I could not believe how kind and generous and giving they were. And I mean, it seems like over 1,000 people talked to me. My throat was hoarse when I left there. I had talked, sang, met so many amazing, wonderful people. It's perfect for him if they could make it happen. And you know how musical artists love to help. They've been helping you a lot, and they've given me some songs. And it's just a community of people that really are out there in terms of they love to help. And someone in his condition with cancer, and him being a musician, is the perfect place to contact. I had a guest on one of my shows from West Music as a music therapist. I don't know if you remember that. I can't remember what month I did that show, but I actually had a music therapist.
Usually there.
On. It's called West Music Therapy, I believe. We can strategize on this and just build it and they'll come, kind of a thing.
Well, and I have another possibility, and then I got to take a second moment while you guys strategize. But the other thing that I did, and again, it's just throwing the line in the water. You don't know if any of it'll hit. But when I got permission to play the song I'm going to play now, and you guys heard it the first time last week, it's by a very big name in Tennessee, and you wouldn't know maybe Gary Nicholson's name as much, but any really famous country star in particular that you know, Brad Paisley, just about any of them you could think of, and some R&B, but not quite as much, this guy has written songs for that these people have, you know, made a zillion dollars on. He's won 2 Grammys, and when I called to get permission, he was a nice enough man. Most of them, like my namesake song there, that will not get back to me no matter what I do. This famous man actually had his son get back to me, because his son, this guy calls himself a writer and a producer. So if somebody produces music, if they can produce their own in-house, that means they could feasibly produce another one. And I wrote a brief letter back thanking him for the rights to use his song on Brain Injury Radio, and I attached Palm of Your Hand to it, And I said, I don't want to be presumptuous when you've done me a favor and given me permission to use your song, but here's a deal. And I attached the song, just if you'd be willing to listen to it. And so I wonder about following up with Nathan on that, or like you said, Les Paul, if there's anyone else listening out there who's capable of this function, producing this function, then then that would be really good, I think.
I do too.
I had something in mind. Anyway, we will brainstorm on that, but I need some hot water.
I just posted musictherapy.org.
Oh, good. Good. I'm going to have to take that down. I sure wish I knew how to save these things like you do. But anyway, we'll be back to brainstorm in, what time is it? Oh, God. It's almost quarter till the show. I'm going to play one more song, and then I'll unmute the mic and tell you guys goodnight. I want to thank everybody who listens to and supports Brain Injury Radio. We really appreciate it, and we hope you are having some moments of gratitude in this period of Thanksgiving. And this is a song by, might as well round it out, by the guy we've been talking about. This is John Cruz, and what started it all for me 10 years ago, Palm of Your Hand.
Of your hand, like a jewel
John Cruise Blues with Palm of Your Hand, and I heard that song and fell in love. Well, that song was a little longer than I bargained for, and with the couple minutes of time we have left in the show, so we don't just get cut off. I hate it when that happens. So I want to thank Allie and Les Paul for hanging out tonight to the bitter end, and all the other guests that were in here earlier. I especially want to thank my featured guests tonight, Barbara Sahara and and Dawn Westfall. I wish them the best of luck, and I think that they brought some things up, a great stimulation for a lot of people involved in support groups, that this be a part of it. I want to thank my sponsor of Recovery Now, Lash Publishing. Check them out at lapublishing.com. And we want to thank all of our supporters on Brain Injury Radio. And I'm going to close in the usual way, but only with the 51 seconds of it. And that's something that I believe we all have. And God bless you, a guardian angel. By Leah West. Check her out at LEAHWEST, LeahWest.com. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
God replies, yes, it's your